Back together again, you and I, chatting it up midweek Wednesday, October the 9th, 2024, right here on Connecticut Today, where I talked about a controversy brewing in New Britain regarding the possible use of metal detectors in some of that city's schools. Hearst Connecticut Media columnist and senior editor Dan Haar stopped by to preview a big 5th District U.S. House debate between Johanna Hayes and George Logan, while WICC meteorologist Paul Piork had the very latest on Hurricane Milton.
You know, one of the things that drives me nuts, especially when it comes to law enforcement and making sure that certain people are afforded the same amount of law enforcement and protection and value for their lives and the welfare of them, their lives, their children. Certain people in certain communities can enjoy the same importance as to ensuring safety as other people can. I've always said to you that I think any degradation of safety, of the intent to make sure kids in minority neighborhoods are safe, that they enjoy the same academic safety measures and the same measures of making sure they have a proper upbringing and have all the school things available to them that better income areas have. I think that's important. I think it's only fair, and I think it's the moral thing to do. Unless we have the specter of phony racism, unless you have people there thinking everything is racist, even trying to keep our kids in certain communities is racist. It's the same stupid notion that there should be less enforcement of speed limits and common traffic laws in Black and Hispanic neighborhoods, because of course, those are underprivileged neighborhoods, so we should allow more criminality. If you don't believe me, go back and listen to any of our discussions we had on red light cameras, stoplight cameras, speeding cameras, video surveillance of people passing school buses, stuff that put our Black and Hispanic and minority kids in danger. It should be allowed, you know, whatever, because there are certain people that are economically disadvantaged. Well, guess what? We have more of this lunacy, this stupidity going on in one of our biggest cities in the state. Now, I had to start with this because I got halfway through this story and my head started to crack. I thought I felt a fissure, you know, a crack growing beyond one of my ears in the back here. This is in the city of New Britain, a blue city, a city that's had challenges, but under the tutelage of soon-to-be former Mayor Aaron Stewart, they're doing pretty good. All right, not too bad. She may run for governor, but that's another story. Get this story. This is the kind of thing that I just look at and I laugh, because the stupidity regarding this story is this firmly falls in the you can't make it up. I'm in a way, by the way, this is Allison Cross's story in the Hartford Courant. Amid a wave of school threats, one city is looking to increase security protocols by potentially installing weapon detection technology at its schools, right? So you're like, all right, well, this is good. Gonna sniff out guns, gonna sniff out knives. But guess what? Guess what? Many of the parents and teachers say they don't want it. Joseph Listro, who heads the New Britain Board of Education, again, the great city of New Britain, hard-hitting New Britain, Joe Listro, the head of the New Britain Board of Ed, said the school board in that city could vote as soon as the 4th of November coming up, I think that's the day before Election Day, to decide whether or not the district will install some metal detectors or weapons detection systems at any or all the city schools, right? And we're talking about a time where, you know, you hear it on this station, you hear it from Melissa, you hear it from Lisa, you hear it from Bridget, you hear it on this show. We have these constant threats. Thank God, none of them seem to be serious. They're crank kids doing what crank kids will, and they're usually found out. But you have all these threats, and everybody's saying, well, this scares the living crap out of people. So the obvious response to this from a functioning and breathing society would be, I don't know, you don't want to take a chance here. Yes, it's good that, you know, 99.9999% of these threats are false. Kids acting out, that's a whole nother story. So we'll talk about that. But you don't want to take a chance here. So get this. According to the district, a recent survey of more than 900 people in the city of New Britain found 87% of respondents support the installation of weapons and metal detectors at high schools. About 85% support the technology in middle schools. 74% said the technology should be installed in New Britain elementary schools. But guess what? Guess what? Many parents and teachers don't want it. Why? Well, you know, it's racist. Of course, to have metal detectors to keep our kids, to keep the staff members, to keep the teachers, to keep the administrators and paraprofessionals safe, to maybe collar those one or two kids who get into a school, much the way this psycho did down in Georgia a few months ago, and was only stopped by a school resource officer. Oh, by the way, though, Chris Murphy, you know, he's walking across Connecticut back and forth. Chris Murphy doesn't want cops in schools, but that's another story. But instead of worrying about protecting kids of all races, black, white, Hispanic, Asian, Pacific Islander, whatever, and to instead of worrying about protecting the teachers and the custodians and the paraprofessionals and other people, administrators in the schools, we're worried about phony racism. Because, of course, anything that exudes safety is, of course, racist. This story just gets more and more crazy. Joining us right now for his weekly check-in, Dan Haar, Hearst Connecticut Media. Mr. Haar, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Good afternoon. I'm just heading into Route 84. I didn't hear the traffic report on 84 out of Hartford there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I'm heading to the debate between Logan and Hayes.
Yes. So let's get to that in a minute, because you're going to be on that panel. First of all, now, were you at this event today regarding what CCM wants to do for these disaffected youths in the state? Talk a little about that. What was that?
I was there. It was at the Capitol. And it is either, depending on how you look at it, and I tend to be charitable about these things, it is either a call for comprehensive and transformative, or is it transformational change in the way we manage the some 119,000 disconnected young people in this state, which is costing the state an enormous amount of human cost, as well as money, as well as effort, or it is a request for $900 million a year.
Well, that's
which is it?
Well, I mean, look, Dan, I mean, yeah, that's a lot of money, but I think people will look at money now. It'll be a tough way to convince them, but they want to say, okay, if we invest in this, what are we investing in and how would this work? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, what I'm saying, what they're saying is the same thing that we've been hearing about human services for the last, I would say, 20 to 25 years. When it dawned on the human services community that you can look at this not as a moral imperative, but as a business and economic imperative in addition to a moral imperative, you never forget that it's human lives that are at stake here when you talk about whether you're talking about domestic violence, any sort of social ill that you're talking about the human cost first. But there is a very real what the commission is saying, and to set this in perspective, this is the commission that was formed by Connecticut Conference of Municipalities with a grant from the Dalio Foundation to look at what the Dalio Foundation already found, which was these 119,000 disconnected young people, meaning either people past high school age who don't have a job and are not connected to society that way, or high school dropouts you know, who are younger or in danger of failing, dropping out of high school. So that's clearly that's what we're talking about. And it happens in every community, and it happens across all, although not as widely, across all socioeconomic backgrounds. So the issue is, if you spend this time, effort, and money, you get a payback. And the payback is $750 million a year in reduced social services, increased productivity, reduced incarceration, and so forth.
So, yeah, and Dan, obviously, I think people would be you know, okay with that, but they're going to want some, like, guarantees that you can't really make in this situation, because this, like you say, that's not a small number of people, and every one of those 119,000 disconnected youth members, I mean, it's not anything you can paint with a broad brush. They have all their own individual things going on in their lives that, for one reason or another, have brought them, I should say, to this point. So it's not easy.
No, it's not easy, and precisely to your point about results, this is what this commission is saying. What they're saying is, let's stop the haphazard, chaotic approach to this that we're doing now, with funding over here for that and funding over there for that, and nobody talks to anybody. And let's create a system that puts the young person first and says, what does that young person need, rather than a system that puts first the institutions doing the serving and saying, let's keep those institutions alive. They have had a healthy debate about whether and how much to dismantle a system that's in place now, and they settled not on dismantling, but rather on working with what's here to, you know, add a spoke to the wheel over there and add a spoke to the wheel over there. But it's very, very oriented to accountability.
Dan Haar, the guest, Hearst Connecticut Media. Dan is on his way now to be one of the panelists in a big debate tonight, sponsored by Hearst and WFSB TV Channel 3. Dan, thankfully, we have at least one federal race coming up in this cycle that's actually competitive, and it's, you know, drawing money and interest from the national parties. Johanna Hayes looking to be reelected to another term. George Logan challenging her. And what was it, about a 0.1% or so, Dan, give or take a little bit last time?
Yes, 2,000 votes, yes.
So
it's actually a little less than a percent.
So what are your thoughts going into this tonight?
My thoughts are two. Number one, there still is a lot of anger on the part of people about inflation, and that's fueling the Republican side. George Logan, the former state senator, it is a swing district by its nature. So he certainly is in the running, and more than in the running, there's a fight. But on the other hand, we are 2 years removed from the last time he ran, and he hasn't held public office in that time. And she, Representative Johanna Hayes, on the other hand, has been a now fourth term, is it 18, 20, 20? Yeah, she's a, you know, fourth term U.S. representative. And so all things being equal, she should have the upper hand when you consider just strategically where we are. Right. Because she's one more term into being an incumbent who hasn't gotten indicted. And I know that's not the entire standard. But and by the way, I'm making a joke about getting indicted. I am in no way. There is nothing in her record.
Okay.
No, you know, but we do these days joke about, you know, if often a public official will say to me, well, if I make this without being indicted, then X will happen. So, but she, you know, she's got a clean record. She has a relatively good mainstream Democratic legislative record. You know, she's done a couple of things, and he's an executive at a water company, which is great, an honorable profession. But she's got a much better candidate for her and for Connecticut at the top of the ticket than Joe Biden, in the form of Vice President Harris, because it's a more exciting, you know, Democratic nominee. Let's face it, Joe Biden did a lot of things, but one of them was not inciting excitement.
So I'm not going to ask you what it is, because we'll wait to hear that on TV. Do you have your question all picked out, Dan? Do you know what you're going to ask?
I do. This is a very planned out event.
Okay.
We've got the questions, and I can tell you, No, actually, I can't tell
no,
you.
No, no, no.
We're not supposed to talk about the question.
I don't want you to get in trouble. So enjoy tonight, Dan Har, Hearst Connecticut Media, taking part in the big debate that'll be televised on Channel 3, Johanna Hayes against George Logan. Dan, enjoy yourself. Good luck tonight. Drive carefully, and we'll talk down the road. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
All right, Dan Har there, yeah. And the man you just heard give us our local forecast, as he does every morning and afternoons, Monday through Friday, right here on WICC. Paul Pjorg joins us right now, as a lot of folks, even though we're up here in the Northeast in New England, Paul, how many people know people, friends, family members, extended relatives, whatever, former neighbors who are now dealing with something that I keep seeing here, Paul? The weather professionals like you say this kind of a storm has not been seen in decades. So what's the latest here?
And you're right, Paul, no doubt about that. The 5 p.m. update came in within the last hour. And before we get to the data and what is going on and what is expected to happen, you remember during Sandy, we had all that devastation in Milford, Stratford, Bridgeport, Fairfield, right? We had a storm surge in Bridgeport higher than 9 feet. And we had, if I recall, a new moon, so that aided in the storm surge. And we think of all the damage and destruction that happened along the shoreline with that 9-foot surge. For this storm, Milton, we are looking at potentially 15-plus feet of a storm surge in and around the Tampa Bay area. And they've got a storm surge warning, and that is just simply devastating.
Yeah, and I'm seeing, Paul, with all the live cable television news coverage here, you know, I'm seeing still, as correspondents are reporting there, you know, in the background, they're on the water there in Tampa Bay, and there are some pretty good-sized boats that are still there. I mean, those boats aren't going to be around in a couple of days,
are they? No, they're not going to be around, right. And, you know, I heard the news earlier this hour on CBS Radio here on WICC, and if you have not evacuated by now, obviously don't. Just find the safest place you can be if you can, obviously, because the storm is now just hours away. So as of 5 this evening, the latest on Milton, it is approaching the coast of West Central Florida. Life-threatening storm surge up to 16 feet is expected later on at night and during the morning tomorrow. Damaging winds of greater than 120 miles an hour, sustained, not gusts, but sustained winds tomorrow morning and overnight. That's really unimaginable around here. And flooding rains, there may be rains in the Tampa area of more than 15 to 18 inches of rain in the next 24 hours. And that's, again, hard to believe. Normally around here for a month, we get about 3 to 3.5 inches. So they may receive nearly a half year's worth of rain in a day or two. So that's the update. So where is it right now? It is about 60 miles west-southwest of Sarasota, about 170 miles southwest of Orlando, Florida, and the maximum winds right now 120 miles an hour. It is moving currently northeast at about 17, and the minimum central pressure currently is at 948 millibars, or as we are more familiar with that, 28 inches, so it's going up just a bit. Now, with respect to the latest update as far as Milton is concerned, the shield, the area of wind is expanding. So even though it's not as strong wind-wise as it was yesterday, geographically, an area, that shield is expanding. So it's growing in size as it moves closer and closer to the west coast of Florida. And hurricane-force winds extend outward up to 35 miles from the center of the storm. And tropical storm-force winds are extended outward up to 250 miles from the center or eye of the storm. So geographically, that's a large area, Paul.
Yeah, I'm looking at that, Paul, on the screen right now, in that entire area of the storm. I mean, the bottom of that storm is touching Cuba.
And, right,
and
exactly.
The top of the storm is past the panhandle all the way into the further states north.
Mm-hmm, exactly. I'm looking at the same thing right now in the latest update from the National Weather Service. And while the top wind speeds of Milton are producing winds of 120, not nearly as strong as it was before, it says here the quote is the wind field is expanding and those tropical storm force winds will expand outward eventually 365 miles from the center or eye of the storm.
Paul, thank you, Paul Pjorg. And, of course, Paul will be with us tomorrow morning with Melissa in the morning to give us the latest on this. Paul, thank you, as always.
You're welcome. Have a good night, Paul.
All right, there you go.